Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Sunday Rose. It's Sunday the 28th of January. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
Sun is shining. We've dodged a storm for the day here in the south, but seeing the damaging effects of Storm Isha and then immediately following Storm Jocelyn. How's it been in the West Country, Charles? I've certainly not seen as many back-to-back storms in my sort of 40-plus years. What about you?
Oh, it's stormy weather, but today it's blue sky and quite nice. It's just a lot of services are kind of out or running out or dying, which is, you know, not optimal when you try to work from home. My primary internet is gone. I'm on backup internet at the moment, as I'm sure most people are. Exactly. I mean, we're all just everyone, like, you can see, like, everyone on the street kind of looking out the window, hoping the Virgin Media might drive up any day now. But, you know, I'm sure it'll be in the next day or two.
First world problems, right? What about you? Yeah, about there, I believe it's raining in EG in Cairo.
Yeah, we had some rain last night, and as we speak now, it was raining there, spitting a few bits, and a few clouds, only a bit of blue sky. But to be honest with you, this winter's been quite good. It's been cold, but not wet so far. So I'm hoping it's old enough till next Saturday, because I'm off to Cape Town next Saturday for a week.
Oh, yeah.
In some sunshine.
So that'll be good.
Going to Indaba, see what's happening in the mining world. I think you're going to find quite a lot of RNSs are going to come out in and around Indaba shortly after, or maybe before even. A lot of the CEOs I've spoken to who are going are, you know, going to be using it as a platform, so that'll be interesting.
I just caught a video of a Stockbox, Mark Sales, talking to Mark Fairman, and he was saying how during the pandemic years, you had a couple of years where everyone was on like Zoom or Teams, right? But actually going to a conference and speaking to investors and majors in person, you can't really replace that. And he's completely right. In a conference, you just get a lot more done in 1 or 2 days in person than you will in 6 months talking online.
So let's look at some of the news stories this week dominating the news. Obviously, Trump winning in New Hampshire, victory in New Hampshire, followed the landslide win in Iowa's caucuses, positions him as the likely Republican nominee. Nikki Haley, who placed third in Iowa behind Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who obviously later withdrew, acknowledged the defeat in New Hampshire and plans to take her campaign to South Carolina next. Despite her efforts and a last-minute surge in voter support, Haley trailed Trump significantly in the polls. Trump criticized Haley in his victory speech, while Haley's team responded by labeling his remarks as a furious and rumbling rant. Haley, who was cautious in criticizing Trump initially, has recently intensified her attacks, questioning his mental acuity and relationships with dictators. However, with Trump's strong hold over the Republican base, Haley faces a challenging path ahead, especially as she opts out of the Nevada caucuses. A loss in the upcoming South Carolina primary could be detrimental to her campaign, as historically no Republican has won the first two primaries and failed to secure the nomination. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that Trump is definitely going to be the Republican nominee this time round? And do you think, what is his chances against Biden?
I mean, I think Trump will definitely win in terms of he will be the Republican candidate. And I think anybody can compete with him for that. The question is Biden going to be the person he campaigns against? Obviously, Democrats really, you know, no one's running against Biden, so you're saying Biden's going to do it. But I think most people would agree his mental acuity just isn't there anymore. And you could probably say the same of Trump as well. I mean, it's kind of funny. Bill Clinton is younger than both of them, right? And I kind of look at it and I go, you know, in the US, you have to be a minimum of 35 years old to be president. Perhaps there should be a maximum age as well. But it is what it is. It's going to be most likely Trump v. Biden. And it's going to be a really, really strongly contested election because, well, Biden's economic performance, yes, the stock market is doing really well. And yes, inflation is coming back down. But the average American, I would say, has probably not had a great time of it over the past couple of years. So when they go to the voting booth, are they going to want to vote Democrats? Then you've got Trump, who's obviously the most Marmite character in the world, but his actual politics are quite popular in the States. And then mixed into that, you have the abortion debate, and I don't want to go into that, but obviously that's going to rile up a lot. There's a lot of emotions riding high. So it's going to be a really interesting election year. What do you think, Kev?
I think my feeling is that, yes, I agree with you 100%. I think Trump is going to get the Republican nomination. Who else is there? I mean, DeSantis was a good possibility, but the boy down in Florida, I think it was. But he seems to have whimpered out. This lady's hanging on for dear life, and I don't think he's going to carry on. So I think he's going to be the nominee. The interesting thing is all these political maneuvers about trying to, this, how this plays out. I think they will try to postpone these now until after the election, which seems a bit bizarre, when he actually could then be voted in as the president of the United States of America. I personally think if he goes up against Biden now, in the state Biden is now, I think he will win. I think there is so many people against what Biden has done in terms of the whole wokeness, for one, and secondly, the, I suppose, foreign policy, because his foreign policy has not been a strong card. And, you know, we're seeing that play out in all different parts of the world. So that's my call on it, whether it actually comes to pass and we have Mr. Charisma, Mr. Personality, Mr. Who knows what we're going to get back in as president.
How ethical, though, is it? I mean, you know, the fact he's under, how many lawsuits has he got? And, he's been indicted, you know, he's got effectively, we've seen the mugshot of him, he's got the criminal record now. Is it legal to have a president who's got a criminal record in the, I don't know what the rules are in the US, but I certainly can't imagine prime minister being elected in this country with a criminal record and sort of basically solicited insurrection or whatever he incited with the storming of the Congress. What are your thoughts on that and all the ongoing, he's got about 14 court cases, I believe, that are ongoing at the moment.
That's just the blob attacking him, in his own words. It helps his political case to say, the establishment don't want me in charge and they're going to come after me legally to stop me from running in the first place. So, you know, there's the theoretical, which is, yes, he could be banned from running as president, but practically that's unlikely to happen. And it just helps him. This is the thing, it all just helps him grow his political case.
He used the mugshot, didn't he, to put on T-shirts and things. Buying that with the caps with the mugshot on, and it just became bragging rights for him, didn't it?
I'll tell you, I think this is the thing, right? Like, I'm not a fan of Trump personally. I think you'll struggle to find many people who are, right? Yeah. But he's one of the few politicians who just does not have a filter, which can be a bad thing in many ways. But actually, you know, if he just, you know, it's not... I'm trying to think of the words, Steve.
Does he get things done, Charles? I mean, it's a bit like, if you look at the past 5 or 6 British prime ministers, the only ones who ever really got anything done were the likes of Boris Johnson. You know what I mean? He pushed bills through, whether that was right or wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's like, does it need someone with a backbone and no filter to actually get laws and things done?
I think it's, in the UK, sure, but the thing, the separation of powers, prime minister, if they've got majority in parliament, they've got executive and legislative power, so they can do pretty much anything. Whereas in the States, you have the separation of powers. So the president doesn't, unless they have both the Senate and the House of Representatives, it's very difficult to get anything pushed through. Sure. And at the moment, you'll see Biden is pretty much governing by presidential orders, which is what Trump did before, because you can't actually get anything done. So in the UK, there's too much concentration of power. In the US, the power isn't concentrated enough. So it'll be interesting. I mean, the question is, okay, so say Trump wins. Will he win the Senate? It'll probably be 50-50 again, or very close to. Will he win the House of Representatives? Possibly not. So, you know, this is the thing. There's so much voting and so many candidates to vote for. I think it won't make... But what's probably the more interesting question is what happens in the next election after that. Because if you assume you have a 22nd Amendment, neither of them can run again after that, well, where is everybody positioning themselves for the future? Ron DeSantis drops out. Is that because he's thinking 4 years from now he'll have a proper run at it without Trump in the way? Is there a deal being done in the background? Mm. You know, who's going to be in charge of the Democrats in 4 years' time? Who knows? There's no obvious candidates.
Vivek Ramaswamy. He's basically an entrepreneur, an American entrepreneur, and founded Rio Sciences Pharmaceutical Company in 2014. Now, I think he's positioning himself to be the next candidate. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Trump put this guy as his vice president, or, you know, his running mate in terms of the going for president, because he's very, very switched on. He's going to appeal to the younger voters. And also, he's very intellectual as well. Like, he's very smart. He's only 38 years old. And I've been very impressed with him, to be honest with you. He's been very good.
So while we're on the subject of US, I don't know if you saw this news, that Alabama's carried out the execution of a convicted murderer, Kenneth Eugene Smith, and he used nitrogen gas. And it's the first global use of the method for capital punishment ever. Pretty grisly. I mean, the witnesses say it involved him thrashing violently for around 25 minutes. And obviously, it's faced criticism from the UN as potentially cruel. What are your thoughts on that kind of that very archaic rule on the capital punishment in the US as well?
Well, in the US, you're not allowed to, well, same as the UK, you're not allowed to punish people with an unusually cruel punishment. That's the actual legal term. Now, the question is, you know, when what they're using nitrogen gas, again, I think it's the first time it's been used, and the idea was he'll just slip into unconsciousness. Obviously, that didn't happen, and with any death penalty, it tends to be the case, whether it's electrocution or firing squad, people tend to linger a lot more than what, in theory, they should. Now, the questions around the death penalty, you know, whatever else, I don't think the death penalty works, and it's clearly, you know, pretty much every single source of data, it doesn't work. Having said that, this person stabbed a mother multiple times in a contract killing. So I'm not entirely sure I have any sympathy whatsoever for what happened to the individual, even though the practice of it I'm strongly against.
Good. And your thoughts, Kev, on the on that whole Alabama execution with this new nitrogen hypoxia?
Well, I think the whole concept is, you know, it's an eye for an eye, arm for an arm, and tooth for a tooth, so head for a head. I don't believe in this philosophy, to be honest with you, full stop. So, you know, if somebody kills somebody, should we kill them? No, I don't believe we should. So I think, you know, we should be a more sophisticated society than this now. Now, obviously, in the South of America, this is not the case. Not that they're not sophisticated, but they've got it ingrained in them. A lot of stories I read, actually, yeah, I like John Grisham as an author, and he often writes about these types of things and crime stories and people being on death row and stuff. So,
yeah,
no, I don't agree with it full stop. So the source of how you kill people is the least of my worries. We shouldn't be killing people.
No.
Plus that. Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I completely agree with you. I mean, we're beyond it as society, or we should be.
As you said, Charles. It doesn't work. It's not a threat. When you're trying to kill somebody, you're not thinking, oh, I might get killed, because you're probably in some sort of psycho state at the time you're doing it.
Yeah,
you know, no matter what.
Exactly. Paranoid schizophrenia, absolutely. So let's move on to something that's very close to your heart, Kev. Obviously, we heard the news Klopp off. Jurgen Klopp to step down as Liverpool manager at the end of the season.
His head sitting the desk if you can't hear it.
Your 2015 arrival, 9 years as the manager, not long really in a tenure when you compare the likes of Wenger and Fergie, etc., but a pretty good turnaround to what was a pretty lackluster club when he arrived. He also ran. So what are your thoughts on it? I mean, obviously, he's been the saviour of a club that you've supported for pretty much all of your life, let's say. What are your thoughts on him going?
I don't have any thoughts. I only have feelings at this moment. I'm sorry. No thoughts whatsoever. I am very grateful for him. He has brought joy back to me watching football and to countless millions, I think. Because even the naysayers of Liverpool like Klopp, because he wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he? There's no ifs and buts. He wants to win, and he's a good way of doing it, I think, in terms of the way he deals with himself. So, yeah, it's going to be an extremely sad day. I think personally they've already got the next manager lined up, and that's probably going to be Alonso, I think. Alonso's been doing great stuff in Germany, I think. So I fully expect that. I mean, there was the talk that Gerrard would come back, but he hasn't really proved himself as a manager. So
I think a lot of these, we were talking about this the other day, like what, there's not many of the sort of footballers, the past professional footballers, the likes of Giggsy, Wayne Rooney, you know, you mentioned Gerrard, we've seen Lampard have a goal. None of them really make it at that grade. All right, we've got the current British, England manager. But ultimately, Southgate, there's not many that have made it, are there? Just because they can play football doesn't necessarily mean they can coach or manage, does it?
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is that all of those players that you mentioned were brought up during Premier League years, okay? And during those Premier League years, they've been spoiled rotten. They've got lots of money. So they don't need to become a manager. It's not like the days
No, you're right.
I mean, Keegan became a manager, didn't he? Because basically the money was there for him as a manager. Dalglish became a manager. You know, two of Liverpool's greatest players. They both became very good managers. They didn't need the money. But they were multi-millionaires like these guys are today.
I think, you know, feeding into that, it used to be the case, I say used to, we're talking a couple of decades back, that footballers would like play mostly on the bench, but play into like late 30s, early 40s, right?
Yeah.
Now 35 is very, very old. So you used to have that sort of 5 to 10 year transition period where you were playing a lot less, but paying a lot more attention to the coaching, to the managing. then when you took a management role, you'd already shadowed somebody for a long time. That doesn't happen anymore. No. You know, I mean, people just at 33, 34, you're kind of like written off, even though that's still very young. And then you just don't have that, you know, unofficial training that used to exist.
Yeah, I agree.
There's one player who, and I'm not talking about this from a Liverpool's perspective, but there's one player I really think will be a great manager, and that is James Milner. Been at Liverpool, Leeds, Manchester City. Anyway, he's been around the block, played more games than near enough anybody else now. He's now headed off to Brighton, is it? But I fully expect him to get his coaching stuff. He can also, he's language orientated, a bit like you, Charles, as well. They learned Spanish. So, you know, he's going to be able to speak to people, because it was very funny. He was giving Messi grief on the pitch, and Messi called him a donkey in Spanish, and he responded back to him in Spanish. And
that shocked
him. He was like in absolute shock.
Nothing better as well.
So much of a donkey now. Yeah, I mean, I think Klopp's smart enough both to know and to act when the time is right to move on, isn't he? And for reasons way beyond just for football, he's shown himself to be an exemplary figure, and that's coming from a United fan, do you know what I mean? I think he's a really well-respected bloke. I think he's done a fantastic job. And I really liked, I don't know if you saw the interview, but I urge you to listen to the interview where he obviously came out with the announcement. He did a sports car analogy, basically said, I am a proper sports car, not the best one, but a pretty good one, can still drive 160, 170, 180 miles an hour, but I am the only one who sees the tank needle is going down. I thought that was superb, because, I mean, ultimately, you look at the video of him when he came to the club in 2015 and look at him now, you tell me that is not aged him. Do you know what I mean? I know 9 years is a long time, but you look how young he looked when he came, and you'd be shocked.
Well, it's like Tony Blair, any prime minister that goes in, right, on a human level, regardless if you agree about politics or not, they always age about 5 years in, you know, for every sort of 6 months, as I say, you know, in football, you know, and the pressure that you have on your head, you know, I think, you know, I'm not sure whether he's going to go into retirement or he's going to take a year off.
Charles, some of these politicians need to take a leaf from Klopp's book and know and act when the time is right to move on. Or do you think that they're just too narcissistic and arrogant to just not give up?
I don't know. I mean, personally, I think, yes, they should just know when to move on. I think, for example, you know, I don't think more than 10 years in the House of Commons is necessary, you know, to the vast majority of people. I think the problem that you have, and I know a couple of MPs, you know, personally, is that if you become an MP, generally you've done like PPE at, you know, Oxbridge or Russell Group University in the UK, and then you become a political researcher, and then you become an MP, or you work, you know, in politics. What do you do after you are an MP? And it's very easy, especially if you're in a state seat, to stay doing it forever. There's no like obvious career transition unless you have like a, you know, like a brand name like Boris Johnson go into journalism. So I guess this is the issue, that you're not qualified to do anything else unless you did something before. But yeah, I think a lot of them should, once you're stale, just go, let the new blood in.
A paycheck to worry about, ultimately, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
A paycheck and influence as well. So both of those factors are unfortunately.
And the likes of Liz Truss, who, despite the fact she only lasted something like, was it 70 days, she ultimately is going to take a pension or whatever, you know, they get that payment for the rest of that. It was like 150 grand a year just for bowing out. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is ridiculous. But then, you know, I do think, you know, just my genuine opinion is that a standard MP is paid about 80 grand a year, right, to lead the country. Obviously, the average income is about 35 grand. So it is, you know, to the average person, a lot of money. But actually, you know, in London, that's not very much. No. And I think that if you were to increase the amount you were paying MPs quite substantially, but get rid of expenses, you would probably have a much higher caliber of people running to run the country. But obviously, that's very contentious.
Should we move on to the movers of the week on the markets? Yes. For the 5 days, I saw Helium One Global was effectively the winner, some 240% up on the week. I think it was slightly higher when it moved to its peak, but let's say around the 200% mark. They announced drilling results from the Itumbula West 1 well in Tanzania. The well reached a total depth of 961 meters and encountered consistently elevated helium shows over 20 times background levels while drilling through the lake beds formation, red sandstone group, Karoo group, and basement targets. Helium shows increased further across fault zones intersected by the well. Elevated hydrogen shows over 2,000 times background levels were also measured in the lake beds formation and crew group. So what are your thoughts on that? It's good to see it obviously bounce back. We saw a sentiment, which or effectively a raise, which killed the sentiment because it was done at such a massive discount earlier in the year and also the back end of last year. What are your thoughts on that one as a recovery?
Well, I think, you know, speaking of that raise, 2 weeks before the raise, the CEO did say that they were, you know, talking to investors about, you know, raising money without having to issue a placing. So, you know, maybe there's a lesson there, A, in reading RNSs, and B, in, you know, it's difficult to raise money in these markets. In terms of the results of that RNS, yes, it's very promising. One, they need to put wires down it. They need to do more work to see exactly what they have. My concern is that with helium and hydrogen fines in particular, is that it's very difficult to know at this stage whether you've got a commercial discovery. And when, yes, the share price has gone up 200, 250%, that's from a very low base off the raise. So, you know, if you're a long-term holder, you're still deep in the red. Having said that, is there a strong opportunity for a recovery story? Yes. It's just the information you have isn't enough yet to make that decision. What do you think, Kev? What did you read into it?
Yeah, I haven't really read a huge amount about the technicalities of it, so I'm not going to comment about the technicalities of it, but I just feel people must feel a bit sort of raped and pillaged in terms of what happened in terms of that raise.
Yeah.
We picked Helium One last year as one of our stocks of 2023 and has been a unmitigated disaster, basically, because they raised money, drilled a hole, didn't work, raised money, drilled a hole, didn't work, raised more money now at a ridiculous valuation, which they didn't really have a choice, granted. You know, if the business was going to continue on, they had to have more cash. And now they've got a sniff of helium. So as you said, helium's not as simple as everybody thinks. It's got to be enclosed in some sort of structure for them to be able to get it out or in the sands and to actually get it out on an economic basis. It's very valuable if they do. And for all shareholders, I hope they do. But I think they've been led on a merry song and dance, which is not pleasant.
Well, I think it's you know, I was speaking to somebody the other day about it. It feels to me like they're at a roulette table and they've put all their chips on number 26, right? Mm. They've done this raise at this huge discount. They've gone for this one target. They now think they have something. And I guess, you know, for me, the question is, if you've been in this for a long time, do you trust the board to deliver and the RNSs they're releasing and everything else? So that's one question. And second is it value at its current price point? Is it going to be profit taking, or is it going to continue to recover given how low the base still is? I don't know. It's not a company that I would invest in at the moment.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because like they raised at 0.25 pence just before Christmas.
Yeah,
like the 6 million, and they, you know, Lorna said that they was going to use the funds to obviously drill the Itumbula well, which we've just seen the sort of initial results from. But obviously they had that the duster, didn't they? As it were, I call it a duster because there really wasn't any shows at the tie three well. So what the problem is like how much cash burn have they got? And if this is a successful well, what they do, will they put it into production soon after, or will they move to another? You know what I mean? It's like, at what point do you
stop? I think it's also, you know, like, again, I don't know that much about helium or hydrogen. What I do know is that, as Kev said, it's very difficult to prove that it's worth doing more work on an asset until you get to a certain level, and then it becomes very valuable. So what they need to do is do enough to, you know, get somebody else in to make, you know, to commercialize the asset, right? Ooh. They're not there yet, anywhere close. If they do get there, then all great. But again, as you say, what's the cash burn situation like? How long will $6 million last? I don't know. We don't know. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Good luck to the holders, I would say.
Absolutely. What's its current market capitalization?
So at 0.6 pence, it's 20 million market cap because of the amount of dilution. They've got 3.5 billion shares outstanding now, and they had only like 600 million at the time, you know, at the time of the first raise back in September. So it's gone from that. They had 2 billion shares on the last raise.
Yeah, so you got to ask yourself the question then, and this is why I'd be asking myself, is if they don't find the helium in a way which means they can basically get it out the ground pretty sharply, then how is a 20 million valuation come to? Because they don't have anything else. They don't have any other assets. This is pure 20 million pounds of exploration risk Is that Charles or not? I'm not sure.
I'd say that's pretty fair. It's pretty fair. I mean, you put the wires down, and I guess, you know, like there's a couple of companies in my portfolio, for example, that are much lower than when I bought them, like everybody else. And I think with this one, I mean, long-term holders are down, what, 95%? You know, maybe more. So are they just thinking, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, cutting my losses now isn't worth it. I'd rather just stay in and, you know, cross my fingers. And if it goes to zero, that's life. I think there must
be some psychology in the SP being so low. And just like buying at half a P, it's only half, do you know what I mean? Or 0.6p. Do you think there's a low share price in there?
I mean, there's a reason why the NASDAQ titans like Alphabet or Amazon or Tesla or any, you know, they do stock splits is to precisely for this reason. Make it, you know, cheap as chips. Yeah. So
buy a company that's got a £25, £30 or $40 stock price because you don't get many shares. But when you can buy a million shares at 0.6p for not a massive amount of, you know what I mean? It's like,
The one that came
on the radar this week was Echo Energy, right? I don't know if you saw that. But they I was looking at 0.004p this week thinking that's got cheap. I mean, I remember when it was like 0.2p not long ago. And I was tempted to go in and I didn't. And I saw it bounce back all the way up to 0.12. So it did like about 200%. But obviously it dropped back down towards the end of the week. But I just thought there's a lot of liquidity there as well. And a lot of buying came in. So it just shows you that there's some of these people are buying 30, 40 million shares for not much money. I think it's a kind of a mindset thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Obviously, you have to look at like how many shares are an issue and what actual percentage of company you own and whether you're going to get diluted in the future, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, if you look at Premier African Minerals, I bought that at 0.03 in September 2019.
Yeah.
Because the share price was so low and the shares an issue at the time.
You wanted to scale 50 million shares up for nothing.
Well, why not, right? Yeah. This is the thing. But like, you know, obviously at the time, there wasn't really much going on. I didn't think it was going to collapse, but I didn't, you know. But there's plenty of like companies like that where I look at, you know, I am First Class Metals, right? Tweeted about that company today because they had two TR1 holders. One has transferred their shares from one provider to another, and the second was a distressed seller, essentially. So the share price has dropped like really significantly over the past few days, but not because the company's fundamentals have changed, simply because one of the major shareholders needed money and needed it quickly. My guess would be, I don't know who the shareholder is, but my guess would be that we're coming to the end of the tax year and they realize they've got a tax bill. Well, you know, this is the sort of thing that happens. So, I mean, I look at that and I go, that's great value at the moment. And plenty of other people will be doing exactly the same. I can get loads of shares for not much money.
No, I spoke to James Knowles, Charles. He does know the name of the gentleman and I won't repeat it, but the guy had another private investment in an oil field.
Right,
and he had to have the cash to keep the lights on.
There we go then. You know, I mean, it's the point in making whether it's a tax bill or because you need your money for something else. Often the share price gets depressed when a TR1 seller sells out, not because the company has a problem, but because they need the money for something else.
Yeah. And I also know the guy who bought them in often.
Right. So you know everyone. There, you
messaged me yesterday.
You're probably like a spider, you know, with the webs.
So it's an interesting play because I asked James Knoll as well. And you're absolutely right. I mean, basically, the share price has dropped by 30%, I think, on Friday from the 6 pence where it probably should be. And even that wasn't very expensive, really.
No.
And it's now on sale at 4p. So,
well, you've got the FA.
You should be thinking of fill your boots at this moment.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I
3 million more think about now. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Cheap Zigzag's worth more than £3 million.
I agree, completely agree. And you've got the same results. Yeah. The same results coming back in February. You've got a big conference coming up at the start of March. North Hemlo, ESA. I think is a great buy. But then, you know, this is the thing: is it a falling knife at the moment? Could you get better value? Yeah. But then that's a question you could ask of any company where the share price is falling. I think hopefully Mark's explained what's happened and it will recover.
This is then the question, isn't it? This is then the question. Are you investing because you're looking at the business and saying, okay, I like the fundamentals of this business. You know, two years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years from now, I can really see that this is going to make money. Or are you looking for a trade? Now, the problem is that the market, because of the bad times we've had in the last 2 years, effectively, has moved to the left, which says, I'm in it for a trade. And you really can't blame them. Yeah. But you know, in my pension, I haven't made a trade in 18 months. I just left my stocks. I've left, and I'm saying nimble. Hasn't done well, but I'm saying no. There was reasons why I went into those stocks, and I'm just sitting. So
all you can do, you know, timing the market beats timing the markets, as the saying goes.
Yeah. What about gold and metal? I mean, what a great week for gold and metal resources. Mm. Obviously, we saw the amazing exploration results from Garfield Gold Silver Copper Project in Nevada. Recent geological mapping and rock sampling revealing high-grade epithermal gold-silver mineralization up to 22.7 grams per ton of gold, overprinting an earlier porphyry copper system. This increases the prospectivity and gold-silver potential across the 4 square kilometer mineralized area, and also bonanza silver grades. We talked about this bonanza, didn't we? That was a great word. Silver grades up to 1,225 grams per ton, which was phenomenal grades on the silver, which is effectively 4 ounce rock, were confirmed. A magnetic bullseye anomaly near the high-grade zone has outlined a new uranium target. So, thoughts on gold and metal resources this week?
This is one of my favorite shares over the past few months, and Oliver and his marketing, but just like the time he takes to like go on Twitter and just explain the technical details in basic language, like no other CEO is doing that. He just knows what he's doing. And, you know, I've spoken to him over the phone. Genuinely, this is the person who has something really good and has the experience, knows what he's doing. And I think the best thing about it is obviously you've now got two flagships, because you've got Garfields, which, you know, bonanza grades, and yes, you know, lots of drilling potential, but you also have Pilot Mountain, where in this quarter I would say that most investors think we're going to get some kind of US government grant funding. So if you combine those two things, it's going to do really, really well. And yeah, I mean, the thing with it now is where next, what happens next. So you get funding, you know, in the next month or so, and then you've got to decide how you're going to progress Garfield. I think it's going to do really, really well.
I think it's very rare to meet someone like Oliver, or to find someone who's a geologist, and he's a very good geologist as well. I've talked to him a lot about the ground in Nevada and the different projects, but I've also liked the way he knows exactly how companies are run. He really understands the dynamics of the market, he understands how all the rules and regulations work, and I think that it's rare to find a CEO who really does on the side. Probably Mark Sells, another good example of a geologist who works well as a CEO as well. He really understands the way things work. But certainly Oliver, for such, you know, his age, he's a very experienced bloke, isn't he?
I think so. I always say when you're looking like a junior resource company, you want management as a board to have, you want a geologist who is competent. You want someone who is financially competent and can run the finances properly. And you want someone who knows how to market the company. Those are the three things I'm looking for. Oliver can do all of them, and that's quite rare. Generally, you get one or two. And if you don't have someone who can run the finances properly, you tend to just raise after raise, month after month. If you don't have someone who knows how to market the company properly, you can have a great asset, but no one knows about it. And if you don't know who someone who knows the geology, then that's just a recipe for disaster. So yeah, I think he's the whole package, and hopefully Golden Metal succeeds. I think it will.
Yeah, he's just a bloody nice guy, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And he's very smart and very switched on, and he knows what he's doing. And, you know, the other thing that I think probably people do see it, but he's working very, very hard. I can see him. I mean, I speak to him maybe 3, 4, 5 times a week normally, just to see what's going on. And, you know, he's normally going somewhere or doing something. I mean, I openly say to you that I think that some of the buy-in this week came from presentations he did to investors earlier this week, because he told me he'd done the presentations and he said they wanted to buy in. You know, they were saying, are you going to raise? And he was like, no. So they basically said, okay, we don't have a choice. We have to buy on the market. So you've seen what's happened this week. We've risen sort of significantly from 10 to, there was buys at 16p. I think it's back at 14 maybe now. I don't know where it's going to finish Friday, because we're recording this just before the end of play on Friday. But, you know, he's had some great luck as well, but he's a good guy. And the thing is that Pilot Mountain and the tungsten, I think, is going to be epic.
Yeah,
actually, probably. I think the copper, gold, silver is actually, in my view, probably a bigger resource, though he doesn't want to say that, because the reality is the big play is the tungsten and getting money from the US government and so on and so forth. So I think it's one of those that if you're not in it, you're going to regret not being in it. You haven't missed the boat. in any way, shape, or form. It's 12 million market capitalization as we speak now. That tungsten comes in, you could put maybe a zero on the end of that and it wouldn't be expensive. So, yeah, I mean, I'm bulling it up, but it was one of our picks this year and we're pretty damn confident he's going to deliver.
Yeah,
I really hope for his sake that he does, because he deserves it. He's doing a great job.
The one thing I'm expecting to see from him, and he must have this strategy already. It's trading over the counter in the US already, but all the road shows in the States, right where the real big money is, he's going to go after those next. I'm sure of it, because he's got the story on the map now, and that's what he needs to do. He needs to do a road trip essentially and say to everyone in the US, look what we have. Look at this critical mineral tungsten that we have. Look at these results we have from Garfield. Get investing in us.
Yeah, and I think Pilot Mountain's effectively a given. It just needs the cash. You know, it's not like we need to find the tungsten. The tungsten is there. The amount of tungsten is debatable, but even with the amount that they've already got and defined, it's more than sufficient for what they need.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we should stop being so bullish on that, but yes.
No, we should mention
it's nice, though, isn't it? It's nice to see some stocks move and actually get a bit more positivity back into the markets, because, we have seen some stuff move, but it's good to see a steady climb. It feels like Golden Metals has just been a nice, steady re-rate, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get, I think no matter what price you buy at, 85 million shares an issue, you're not going to suddenly get spiked on Golden Metal, because it's been a nice slow ride up and everybody's putting the shares aside and saying, thank you very much. You know, I've had few conversations with people about different target prices, but all of them are significantly higher than this target price.
You look at the likes of Brez, Blencore Resources, who had a really nice government grant come in, which we saw. What do you think a grant of, say, I don't know, $5 million or $10 million would do to the Golden Metal share price?
I think my personal perspective is that because of how important the deposit is, the market is already saying they're going to get this grant.
Right.
So I think most of that is going to be baked in. But I don't think it's going to be a sell the news event, because you have Garfield on the side, which is why it's so compelling. The question is going to be, okay, so you get the grant funding, and then, okay, so you do some more drilling, and then where next? What's Oliver's strategy? What's the idea once you've got that grant funding? What do you do with Pilot afterwards? What do you think, Kev? I think this is the thing. I think it's...
You think 11 million or 12 million cap, that there's the potential is a grant is already baked into that price?
Maybe not mass completely baked in, but I think, okay, so we're saying the grant is going to come in the next sort of couple of months, maybe, given how long ago it was applied for. If the share price continues to rise as traders, as investors think, okay, the grant is probably going to come. From now, no, if it landed tomorrow, no, the share price would rise quite sharply, but I'm expecting it to come a little bit later, and therefore you're going to be at a higher market cap before it drops officially. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really know. It's hard to make an assumption about the way the market works and the way things will go. But I think maybe Pilot Mountain is worth hundreds of millions to any company in production. Like, I don't know the exact number. We'd have to have a room and a look at what that would all be about. But so if you look at that and say grant funding needs to come, I think 5 million would be ridiculous, because there's no chance they're going to get 5 million. I think they're going to get significantly more if they're going to get a grant, because it requires more for one. And the US government literally has such a need for this tungsten that they're gonna have more, I'm pretty sure. The grants have ranged, I think, anything from around the $8 million to the $40 million from this particular department, from what Oliver has said to me. And, you know, it's in progress, so it's going to happen. But the interesting thing is, I think the warrants are going to start coming in shortly. 10.75p warrants, which go out in May. So they finish in May. So if you've got a share price now for a week or two that sits at 14p or higher, would you be taking your warrants? I think you would. That would probably bring in another 1 to 2 million quid, I think, into Golden Metal. And you're going to stick a drill bit into Garfield as quickly as possible, because you stick that drill bit into Garfield and all of a sudden this market cap could be 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, $100 million or pounds before the grant thing even arrives. So that's my view, because as you said, Charles, I think this company now has two major projects. And before it didn't, it was a tungsten play, and that's what it was. Now it is a tungsten, copper, gold, silver play. This is a porphyry. And this is not like VMSs. This is a porphyry system. And what that means is huge amounts of copper, maybe slightly lower grade, but huge amounts of it, not just in the VMS stage of things. So, which is a volcanic mass sulfide, I think it is.
Yeah.
So, and they form as if they were on the bed of the sea, whereas this porphyry is almost like the system that spreads the copper in the area as a whole, rather than just in specific spots. So, yeah.
Okay, so anything else on the radar, Charles? I know you mentioned Greatland Gold. Do you want to just talk us through the news that they had out in the last week?
Yeah, sure. So they just released a quarterly update on Havieron, as they tend to do. Total development now exceeds 3,060 meters. That's 80% of the vertical distance through to the top of the ore body. Dewatering is ongoing, which obviously is one of the issues that investors are a little bit worried about. The mineral resource estimate, as we know, was increased in December to 8.4 million ounces of total gold equivalent metal. And then obviously you've got the Newmont question, what are they going to do? What's their plans going forward? And Newmont is obviously probably the biggest question mark, because I don't think this gold is going to get dug out of the ground eventually, right? And they're going to use Telfer to process it. And the question is whether Newmont wants to retain or even buy out Greatland Gold, obviously Greatland's 30% of the Havieron, or do they want to get rid of it as part of their disposals program? Objectively, even after the mineral resource estimate was increased, objectively, Havieron and Telfer don't meet those tier one requirements that Newmont has set out for itself for assets they want to keep hold of. But subjectively, there's still probably more gold to find if they continue to drill. It's in the best location in the world. And then on top of that, the capital expenditure would be very low because you already have the Telfer processing plant. So the problem that, you know, maybe it's not about, I mean, I see optionality, but markets like certainty, right? So what you have is you have not knowing what Newmont is going to do. And that's creating, obviously that creates opportunity for you. But the moment Newmont goes, right, this is what we want to do next, you'll have that certainty and the share price will go up. I think that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Charles. I think it's, in simpler terms than you're putting it, if you're a trader, then I would suggest you stay away. If you want to be a long-term holder for Greatland Gold, then I think now's the time to accumulate, because I don't think it's going anywhere in terms of valuation, other than up in terms of whether they progress it or someone else progresses it, or they get bought out, or they buy back the mine themselves with the help of Wailo. You know, are Greatland Gold shareholders going to be worse off? No, I don't think in any situation.
I mean, the other thing to bear in mind is obviously they've got the joint venture with Rio Tinto, and they're exploring various other bits and bobs with Newmont. So there's huge exploratory tenure as well. And yes, you know, it's an outside chance you're going to find another Havieron. Every day in that stock, they're drilling, which is not something you can say of many of the other kind of mid-cap companies. So you have that kind of lottery ticket every day as well, which is quite nice, waiting for an RNS to say, oh yes, we've drilled this, we found something interesting or cool. You know, you don't get that everywhere else.
While we're on the conversation of drilling and joint ventures and all the rest, we should mention East Star Resources, I think, with the grant that they got from BHP, the world's biggest miner. What are your thoughts on that one, Charles?
I think, well, the grant was $500,000, is that right?
$500,000.
It's not a massive grant. Having said that, it's a company. So you've got to put those two things together. I think it's an opportunity now that, you know, traders have come out of it. But the question is, what's it going to do with the money? Where is it going to go next? $500,000 doesn't go that far. What does BHP want to do? Obviously, this copper looks interesting, but, you know, a grant as well, grant funding isn't something that you get or see very often. If you do get grant funding, like with gold and metal, it's symbolic that you've got something worth looking at. And again, it's a porphyry deposit. So what you were saying about, you know, gold and metal, it's the same style of copper mineralization. And then I think rather than the money, right, so obviously people are focused on the money. I'm more interested in the fact that Chris Van Wijk has come on as a non-executive director. That's super important. And then you've got the head of the BHP Explore program, Charlie Johnson, saying, you know, the diversity and quality of submissions among the applicants is amazing and inspiring, but they've chosen East Star. So that should give you enough indication that it's something worth, if you're not going to invest right now, definitely watching. What do you think, Kev? What were your thoughts on it?
Well, my thoughts on it is Alex has excelled himself here, obviously. Quite obviously, he's very good at what he does, okay? I think in terms of the market, he misjudged the market earlier last year or late last year when they raised so cheaply. And I've said that. People have criticized me for saying it, but I'm pretty sure he had the opportunity to raise higher and he didn't. That has now led them to raise a smaller amount. And this grant is... At first reading, I thought, oh, this grant's going to really help them in that situation. But at second reading, I realized that the money that they raised previously was for the VMS systems that are in the land that they have. So this is, you know, there's a VMS, they dig it all up, it's shallow, it's high in copper, and you can process it and get cash. But what the grant has been given for is the porphyry system on the same land. So maybe, this land is huge, so it could be literally miles and miles apart.
Yeah.
But it's for a different system. So this is to drill the porphyry system, which is a system that could be huge. Like from the point of view of, we just said it about gold and metals, it's the same situation that the porphyry system in Garfield could be massive. Well, the porphyry system in East Star could also be massive, and BHP wouldn't be interested in the VMS stuff that they're also doing. So It's two tracks now with East Star, both copper, but basically you've got a track where they'll go on the VMS, and hopefully that's going to come to production within 18 months, as this is what Alex has said. And the porphyry system is going to take a lot longer, but be in a situation where they have all the technical assistance from BHP. They have some cash from BHP. For sure, BHP are like big brother looking over the shoulder going, if it's there, we'll have it. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
Which is obviously going to be amazing for the Star shareholders, me being one of them.
Well, you've got buyer right there. That's the thing, isn't it? You've got a natural buyer. But
And you've got a 3 million market capitalization, I think it
was. That's what I was going to say. Exactly. I was saying about ECR Minerals a while ago. I think their market cap is similar, right? You don't need to find something exceptional to get significant upside. But if BHP is there, then that probably means they've got something at least worth exploring. At this market capitalization, you've got a really good opportunity.
I think the VMS systems alone, with production and the capabilities of how much copper can come out on an annual basis, even over maybe, say, a 10-year period, we should be talking at a market cap of probably anything from 15 to 30 million pounds just for the VMS system. Never mind what BHP and the porphyry system has talked about. So people have said to me, I'm not being negative about it, but I'm not being negative about it. They're going to probably need more money at some point, but this is meaning now you've got two tracks with a major involved and, you know, they've given them the money. I mean, wow, that doesn't happen very often, does it?
Let's just move it along, because I just want to get through one more stock, which has been, you know, maybe seen as a bit negative this week, was Extract Resources. We saw the announcement of the proposed sale of the Manika assets. What are your thoughts on that one, Charles? I know, Kez, because we spoke to Colin about it this week, but what are your thoughts on that and the disposal of this revenue generative asset?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think we have the markets that we have. So, yes, okay, you might go, It's a bad idea to sell something that's revenue generative. But at the same time, consideration of up to $15 million in cash, what can that do for your other assets? Okay. I mean, I was talking about this before Christmas, about like a lot of the juniors and how you don't have many choices if you want money to advance your projects, right?
Yeah.
Raising money in the market. So we saw what happened with HE1, 72% discount to get a bit of money to drill something. Trying to get a high net worth investor to come in. So many of them have got burnt over the past year or two that they don't want to invest at the moment unless it's something they think is really, really, really promising. And every company in the world is saying, yes, I've got the most promising asset. So yeah, I mean, you can take a negative view on it, and I think many will. But having said that, then that's now the funding that you need to advance everything else. I would say, you know, so what would you do, I guess, is a question. If you were in charge of a company, what would you do?
I think it would have been remiss of him, remiss potentially, to not accept $50 million, and then you've obviously got the also the cessation $3.36 million as well. So it's not just that. Some people said, well, it was valued at $20 million, or why, you know, it's a crazy move. But I think ultimately you're right. I think that with the Zambian assets, with Kikuyu, and also now the new assets up in the northwest, which potentially sitting in this Kamoa style deposits area where you've got the likes of First Quantum and other majors drilling, then, you know, ultimately it will go further there and potentially could lead to, you know, as Colin alluded to, you only need one of the others to discover in that area and you've got a whole new kind of gold rush in that.
Well, look, I mean, you've got Barrick has just like invested tons of money to like get a Zambian copper operation running more.
Yeah.
You've got Arc Minerals. I know Colin's got other, you know, various companies exploring Zambia as well. You've got Tertiary and Jubilee Metals. Everybody, there's so many joint ventures and earnings and whatever else going
You've got RH, who are the Abu Dhabi based company.
They're
$1.6 billion into the Mopani mine, which was the state run Zambian mine, which was sort of mothballed, and they've got a 51% interest. So there's a massive amount of money coming into Zambia. I think probably going to be the world's largest copper producer within the next 5 to 10 years.
If you look at the politics and the president, and you know, they want to get the copper, you know, massively increase in the tax revenues that they need. And if you're, you know, if you are, I don't think I've ever spoken to Colin in person, but if you are Colin, you're looking at the Kikuyu project and going, this is in the right place in the country. We want to do something with it and we need some money to make that happen. Then you've got to make a decision, right? History will, I think you judge it, you know, history will tell whether it was the right decision. Yeah. But I think, you know, if I were him in the same place, I think I would have made the same decision. I think you guys would have as well.
Yeah, I think the interesting part about it all is that what people aren't understanding, I think, is that the asset that they're actually selling is going to need a lot more money spent on it to take it to the next level.
Phase two.
Yeah. Phase two has to be paid for. Now, Extract shareholders willing to put their hands in their pockets again and pay it again so that they can have this? Or do they want this cash now? Originally, it was $20 million buyout for the situation for his part, the 23% that Extract Resources hold. He just negotiated $18.325 million and he's had half of the production from the first stage of the gold. So in another market, they'd all be smacking him on the back and saying, well done, great job. Now you've got $15 to $18 million over the next 3 years to put into the ground and produce a copper asset or several copper assets in Zambia and that part of the world that you know extremely well and your geologists know extremely well to produce something. And on top of that, you've got Bush Ranger, where if we do have the copper increase, as in the copper price increases, Bush Ranger becomes a project and a goer. So, you know, I think everybody's hating on this situation partially because the share price has been abysmal, because there was a lot of froth because of Bush Ranger. We thought it was going to be an amazing project and so on and so forth. Hasn't turned out that way yet, but it doesn't mean it won't in the future. But I think he's played a blinder personally, but everybody thinks I just love Colin Bird. But it's not that. I'm looking at the situation and saying, in this market, do I want to have $18 million bird in the hand? Or do I want a gold project in Mozambique that I have to pay millions more to try and make it work in stage two? Which one do I want?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing is as well with Colin Bird, and again, I don't know Colin, but he's made some amazing finds in the past. And then, also equally, you're in junior exploration, so some things are not going to work out. But at 1p a share, you know, and again, at 8.5 million market cap, you've got those millions of dollars coming in, you've got these assets to explore. I think he's doing the right thing, and hopefully there'll be a share price revival over the year. Well, okay, so I had a chat to Kat with Callum, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, talking about how Chill Zero got launched in August 2023. And now, you know, these zero nicotine vapes, they're about to hit the stores, or they have just hit these stores in Morrison's. They're on various petrol station forecourts. You've got thousands of independent stores that are being stocked. And one of my concerns was you've grown really, really fast, probably faster than you expected, which he agreed with. And now how, you know, are you a victim of your own success? How are you going to, you know, fund this going forward? And obviously, you know, we've had this raise to secure funding. And again, at a, you know, 3.75p a share, I think the share price is about 4p at the moment. So a very, very low discount. And then raising £1.2 million for expenses and then £1.2 million of liabilities converted through Jonathan Swan. So this money is, you know, it's going to be needed to grow as much as they are. They're planning on doing even more growth expansion into more chains, into more independent stores. Callum seems very positive on it. And I guess, my takeaway from it is that we need reorder rates, RNSs, from the independent stores, and I imagine that will come relatively soon. But it's exactly the same situation as it was before, which is like you've had huge, huge growth. And these kind of like Morrisons, for example, the product is landing on the shop floors at the moment. So you're going to see the success, the scale of success over the coming months. And having put that funding question to bed, I think if you're a long-term investor, it's going to relax you a lot more. Yes, you've had, you know, a red day today, but it's not particularly red. And it means that when you're looking at the investment case, you can say not only is the growth really strong, they've now got some cash. And now hopefully by the time we come to do more growth, the share price will have increased sharply because RNS will eventually come out where it says we've done X revenue at Y profit with Z profit margin. And, you know, the profit margin on vapes are generally very, very good. And, you know, I think Chill's going to do really well.
So, I mean, let's have a look just very quickly. So FTSE 100 up around the 7,600, up about 1.5% on the close of the week. Dow Jones up. We've seen decent earnings, which have given the US markets a boost. Anything else? Anyway, I mean, gold's obviously still above the $2,000 mark. Anything else that we should be talking about on the market?
I think, you know, closing comment, probably uranium keeps going higher and higher and higher. Power Metal Resources, uranium energy exploration IPO is coming up this quarter, most likely. That's going to be a market event to watch because, it's a uranium IPO. There's very few uranium plays in London. And it's the next way, you know, obviously gold and metal and first class metals are kind of children of power metal. They're offshoots.
This Charles, do you want some good news about the UEE?
Go on then, hit me, Kev. What do you know?
Have a guess who's on the board of UEE.
Oh, is his name Kevin? I'm just joking.
No, it's definitely not.
That's not good news.
Good news at all. That'd be tragic.
Okay, get Rick Rule, potentially. I know he's associated with Powell.
Talked about him a lot.
I'm guessing it's Oliver Friesen.
It could be Oliver. It must be.
Oliver is on the board of UEE. So it should be scheduled to happen in March, what he's intonated to me. So don't hold us to that. But that'd be an IPO that'll be going around in the city. So if you get the opportunity, you might be able to get in.
Well, listen, the thing is, when they staked those assets and uranium was kind of like, I knew what was going to happen. I've been covering it for years, but they staked the assets for virtually nothing. And now they're worth a massive amount of money and you can't get the sets in the Athabasca Basin anymore. So it's going to do really, really well. That IPO is going to be definitely one to watch. And you say March and Oliver's on board, so I guess so am I.
You sold.
Right.
On that note, we'll say, Charles Archer, thanks very much for joining us this week. It's been great to go through some, you know, some stocks and some news and some market news. And we will wish you well and say, catch up with you soon.
Adios. Yep. Bye, guys. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Charles.
So, okay, I mean, what else have we got to look forward to then, Kev? We had a good chat this week, didn't we, about a company. I'm not going to give too many details yet, but certainly talking on the uranium theme and the REE theme that have got Ionic Clays out in Australia, and they'll probably be bringing the CEO on to talk in the next few weeks. That one certainly sounded interesting from what...
Yeah, it did. It was a good chat we had.
Anything else on the radar for coming up this next couple of weeks?
No, I mean, we need some news from Teck Minerals for sure. Recyclist, it's looking rather sorry for itself at the minute, but basically because there's no news, I think. As I said before, I'm really looking forward to Indaba. There's quite a few things going to be happening, I think. I've spoken to Jason Brewer this week as well about he's going to be in Indaba, and he's intonating there's going to be some announcements around some of his companies.
He's doing a talk, isn't he, at one of the conference. He's actually talk, so yeah, for sure.
Jubilee's going to be down there as well. Colin Bird with his four companies are going to be down there. 2-3 weeks' time, we're off to Namibia. Yeah, we hope to see some projects, which is African Pioneer related, Galileo, Bazant. So, we'll hopefully bring you some information and some knowledge of what we can see and what we hear about when we're down there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to all of those things. Yeah, the market's feeling sorry for itself at the moment. The liquidity seems to have dried up a bit, some good stuff, but a lot of the other stuff just drifting downwards slowly but surely. And yeah, let's hope that all changes. And
I think January is a difficult month. January is always a difficult month financially as well. So some people, you know, as you say, we've alluded to one distressed seller in the likes of First Class Metals who's been forced into making sales. Maybe there's retail investors who need to take cash out of stocks for that. And we've seen how just a small sell in some of these companies can wipe off $500,000 off the, you know, $7,000. Yeah, yeah. Wipe off $500,000 off the market cap. Which is...
Someone has to square the credit card bill at the end of January and yeah, sell something and something, and there's no liquidity.
Absolutely.
Then, yeah, this is what's happening. So, I mean, I think, you know, if you did have huge bundles of cash right now, it's buyer's paradise, really, to be honest with you. Just got to pick wise. And again, I was having a conversation with Oliver this week, Oliver Friesen, about the general market and the fact that there are so many of these stocks that could 10 back over the next 1 to 3 years, where in the resource area, it's just phenomenal. I mean, I've never seen it before. And, you know, in this situation, now some of them won't, quite obviously, but I think a lot of them could.
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, we'll say thanks for listening, and please hit the subscribe icon button and also the bell icon so you get further notifications of any future episodes.
Yep, thanks a lot for listening, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.